$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast, the podcast where we revisit and review movies from our youth. I'm your host, Mark Dillman, and with me are my co-hosts, Rick Maxian.
Good day.
Welcome back, Richard.
Yes.
And Brian Higgins.
Ahoy.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing this evening?
Good.
Good. Doing okay. How was your trip, Rick?
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It rained a lot, but it was fun.
Well, it rained a lot here, too, as well. We had quite the storm just last evening. We had a bunch of thunder and lightning going around here. It was a little scary, I must say.
Yeah, it was quite the wet evening.
It was wet. Speaking of wet, the movie we did as a full review of this week was a very controversial one. Controversial for the time, and I think controversial upon rewatching 1995's Waterworld.
Now, this was the most expensive movie ever made when it came out, right?
I feel like something like that, right?
There was
a lot of faith going into Kevin Costner.
There's a lot
because
of water in this
there
movie.
It was like right after or right around Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, but that did well.
Yeah.
So I feel like there was a lot of stock. Costner's stock was on the rise. And then he was like, I'm going to do this. On the tides.
This is that point in the 90s where it feels like everyone was like, let's do a water-themed movie, and it ends up being a disaster.
So what are your other examples?
Just this and Cutthroat Island.
Oh, that
James Cameron threw it all out of whack with Titanic, because that ended up being
Well, that
huge.
Was later, though. That was like
97.
A couple years
after
97. This one. So, 1995. So the director of Waterworld was a gentleman by the name of Kevin Reynolds. Now, he worked with Costner a lot. In fact, probably a movie you guys never saw, but one of Costner's like earlier movies that was quite good was this movie called Fandango.
Fandango.
Oh. About these guys that like didn't want to go to the army and they're just kind of like fooling around and having fun. He also directed Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which was a good movie for Kevin Costner. And then other movies he directed was 187 with Samuel Jackson.
Oh.
The Count of Monte Cristo. Oh,
that's a
with
good one.
Caviezel.
Yeah.
Did that one. Tristan and Isolde, which was like a night mythical movie with James Franco.
I did not see that one.
And then he directed the Hatfields and McCoys miniseries, which also had Kevin Costner in it. So he likes working with Costner. And then most recently, just last year, it was like from a couple of years ago.
Oh.
And then,
about the famous feuding families.
Yes.
I know what that storyline. I didn't know there was a miniseries.
And then most recently, he directed a movie last year with Joseph Fiennes about Jesus called Risen. Now, Waterworld.
That's a movie where Jesus becomes a baker.
Oh, that's true. He uses yeast. So Waterworld, when this movie came out, I remember a lot of people saying this is like Mad Max on the water.
That's accurate.
Because if you've seen the Mad Max movie, there's no water. They're just in like desert wastelands and water is a hot commodity. So it was kind of like they just did the reverse. It's like, it's all water, kind of how it was described. Now, this is another movie that was produced by Costner. Now, it was kind of funny because I was looking at Costner's filmography, and pretty much he's produced almost every single one of the movies he's ever been.
I think he just gets a double paycheck.
Yeah.
It's how they pay him more by not paying him as an actor.
He's the only one that will cast Kevin Costner in a movie.
Well, other people have. This guy, Kevin Reynolds, because they have the same
I'm not convinced he exists.
You think Kevin Costner is Kevin Reynolds?
Yeah, that he just was like, yes, Kevin Reynolds is the director.
Hot take. Guys, do you remember your first time watching this movie at all? Did you see it at the theater? I feel like I saw it at the theater.
No, I did not see it at the theater. I probably didn't see it at the theater because one of you guys probably saw it or somebody that I knew saw it. Do not go see this movie.
No,
it's awful.
When I saw it at the time, I probably would have told you to see it.
Well, then it wasn't you.
I think as a kid, I did not mind this movie.
Oh, see?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater and I think I enjoyed it. I remember being like, it's not as bad as that, as they made it out to be.
Yeah, because a lot of people were shitting on this movie.
Yeah,
I was also 12 and it had a butt in it.
I maybe saw it for the first time probably late high school. It probably was out on video already.
Yeah.
And I rented the VHS.
So this brings up the point, kind of like a deeper question, but how did you guys think about like a movie that you saw that you really enjoyed and that everyone else said it was awful? Did you take offense to it? Like, what was your reaction internally about a movie you might have really liked that you were kind of on the opposite side of everyone else, mass public?
I won't say I really liked this movie. I think I enjoyed it.
I'm saying in general.
I mean, in general, at least when I was that age, like it was this is why they need to have the fans be the critics. You know, the critics don't enjoy things.
Start off the movie with the classic Universal Earth logo. It's like the world, you got the Universal logo coming around, and then it kind of zooms up, and we see the polar ice caps, and they start to melt, and then we get that classic voiceover guy.
Every movie trailer.
New World. Don LaFontaine.
Don LaFontaine.
The future. The polar ice caps have melted, covering the Earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world.
So, like, some really quick exposition, but then, like, it's over.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, when I saw the Universal logo come up, I was sitting there going, oh, God, I really hope that they melt the polar ice caps.
They did.
And they did. I was pleased. I forgot everything about this movie outside of the introduction to Kevin Costner's character. Delighted to see that the polar ice caps melted.
So, here's the one thing I have a problem with with this entire thing is everything's been melted. There are still places that will have land, and it's not going
to... Well, that's called dry land, Rick.
Yeah, but it's not...
We're not there yet. We haven't found it.
It's not going to just suddenly flood, meaning everyone, as the shorelines recede, the people would just move inland more and more until they would stay on dry land. No one would just enter the sea. It doesn't just...
But after many years, I don't know.
But it doesn't
I don't
just,
know what happens.
It doesn't rise instantly. It
That's true.
It wouldn't just be like, oh, we flooded
All
everything.
All of a sudden it's flooded.
Everyone needs boats.
Right.
We need to build things out
we
of
need to
waste
boat.
Things. It wouldn't have happened.
Now, I'll let Brian start to get into the plot, but the first thing, the first image of this movie, and I remember as a kid how, like, I was like, that's weird, and then seeing it again is Kevin Costner, who plays the Mariner, who is, like, a half-human, half-fish. He's peeing into a machine that filters out the water of it so he can drink his own piss. And I remember as a kid being like, that's gross. Again, that's the first scene. And then watching this movie again, I'm like, man, he's got a lot of pee in him.
Yeah.
Like I said, that was the scene that I remembered. The only thing I remembered was him pissing.
The piss machine, yeah.
And drinking his pee.
That image sticks in your head.
The question it begs for me is, if they have the technology to filter your piss, why don't they have the technology to filter, like, the ocean water?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Just filter out that salt water.
Yeah.
Drink that. You're surrounded by it. You
it
would
seems
imagine
like he's
they could
the only
do
one that has that technology.
Or filter out bad acting.
Again, as we get into the plot here, the one thing I wanted to ask you guys is, as we get into the story of this movie and the clothes and the technology, the boats, is this classified as steampunk, would you say?
No.
Okay, it's not.
I would say it's just post-apocalyptic.
Post-apocalyptic. Okay, gotcha. Again, like Mad Max.
Yeah, it's Mad Max on the water. I mean, that's what it is.
Because maybe it's not as much steampunk, but it was very, a lot of the contraptions, like on the boats, was very Rube Goldberg. It was a lot of like, you pull this, and then this activates this, and there were like a lot of pulleys and hammers, and like, I'm sure in somewhere there was like one of those drinking birds that just goes up and down, and that probably controlled something.
Yeah, all right, we'll go with that.
First, I do want to mention it wasn't Don LaFontaine. It was actually voiceover actor Hal Douglas.
Oh.
Another movie trailer guy.
Can you read the first sentence like him?
Long after the melting of the polar ice caps in the 21st century, the sea levels have covered every continent on Earth. The remains of human civilization live on ramshackle floating communities known as atolls. Or is it atoll?
Atolls.
Atolls.
Yeah.
Ramshackles.
They're ramshackles. Having long forgotten about living on land, people believe that there should be a mythological dry land somewhere in the endless ocean. The Mariner, Kevin Costner, a lone drifter, arrives on his trimaran to trade dirt, a rare commodity, for other supplies.
So I'm recalling a memory that I forgot to bring up the first time I saw this movie. I read the book based upon the movie before I saw the
movie. Oh, the novelization.
I read the novelization, so.
I did not.
It came out, I don't think I saw the movie like opening weekend or probably the first couple weekends, and I read the book. So it was kind of interesting to be like, oh, the Mariner. I thought it was a cool name for the character, though. Just to have, like, Mariner.
I like the Seattle Mariners.
Oh.
We're
Red Sox
Griffey
fans
Jr.
around here. One of the things about the Mariner is I have to... So he's a loner. He's a drifter. And when he meets other drifters, they kind of live by this drifter code. He encounters this other drifter, and he mentions the title of the movie. So, of course, we got to play that clip. Now, please be warned, the other drifter he meets is hard to understand a little bit. So keep that in mind.
I've seen your butt before. Haven't seen you. Took it legal.
owner was dead on the tiller when I found it. You had another hour before I cranked it up again. Just improving my means.
Well, I owe you this.
No thanks. I got all the supplies I need. Just came from an atoll. 8 days east if you're interested.
Two drifters meet. Something needs to be exchanged.
I know the code. And I'll give you this one for free.
Nothing's free in Waterworld.
Like, I never realized that they called it Waterworld.
Yeah.
That's just what they lived in.
I didn't know that either, actually. And I even remember watching this part, and I still didn't catch that.
I thought it was funny how the other drifter had, like, a spaghetti strainer as a hat.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that get hotter?
Yeah.
So it's
just like
sun.
The heat would, like, well, reflect. Like,
the other drifter steals his limes.
Lime tree.
Like, which is just a very small tree that's holding 58 limes.
This is a recurring theme of people doing things and then, like, flaunting it throughout the movie.
Like, they show like, off
he's just like, hey, look,
deeds.
I stole your limes.
I stole your stuff.
And, like, later, like, one of the bad guys isn't paying attention, and Kevin Costner throws a spear right at, hit like, a barrel that's next to him. And
oh,
he's
yeah.
like, hey, look, it's him. I'm just like, why did you bother to get his attention?
Yeah, right.
Just go.
I think he was trying to hit him, wasn't he?
I don't know. He's the only one that can aim in this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing not.
Let me ask you this. So Waterworld, as we know, did not do great. Do you think it had, they were trying to go for maybe, like a lot of the Tom Cruise movies, they're going for international appeal sometimes. So it's like, why'd they have this actor who you can't really understand at all talking to him where maybe they're trying to get the international success of like different regions where they're marketing this movie?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So yeah, that's up with that drifter. All right.
And then the drifter gets like assaulted by the jet ski
the smokers.
Bikers. I just call them jet ski bikers.
Well, that was the thing I thought throughout this whole movie, because you have people that obviously have sailboats like the Mariner, and then you have the smokers, which we find out is led by the Deacon, Dennis Hopper. They're all like on jet skis and stuff, and I'm like, where does all this fuel come from?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, we find out later.
Yes. But I was thinking like the whole time, like,
did they somehow power ocean water?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're on the atoll.
Yes.
The residents see that the Mariner is a mutant with gills and webbed feet.
Ooh.
And decide to drown him in the atoll's recycling pit, a kind of liquid compost facility. Now, I thought this was poops.
Oh, did ya?
Like, because it was just this sludge that they were dumping a dead body into.
So they describe these people as just the residents? Because yeah. At some point I got the vibe like they were like a weird like religious group. But one of the guys who was part of the group, a frequent actor who's been in a couple of our past reviews, it's Scary German Dude.
Yes.
Was one of the guys from Monster Squad and most recently Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
Was one of the dudes that was part, you know, and they all wanted to kill the Mariner because he was, as they described it, a muto.
Bastard.
Very Total Recall.
Yeah.
But originally, before they start trying to kill the Mariner, his whole purpose was to sell this dirt that he had.
Yeah, he had some dirt.
From supposedly dry land, which is like this mythical land where, you know, the water's gone. And the first thing he did when he got off the boat is he blinded children with a rearview mirror.
Yes.
You remember that? Because he was like, you get a rearview mirror, you each do if all my stuff's still here when you get back. It's like an 80s movie where they go into like an urban area and like all of a sudden like the street toughs are like sitting on the car or something. He's
yeah.
like, don't touch my rims.
If my rims are still there, there will be something in it for you.
You'll get the rearview mirror from my car. So like we said, his original intent is to sell this dirt, and he gets a kind of a pretty penny for it because people haven't seen this dirt anywhere before. So
right.
Let's hear a little bit about the currency that he gets for this.
Pure dirt. 3.2 kilos. How'd you come by so much of it?
Another ace hole 30 horizons west of here.
Where'd they get it?
They didn't say.
We heard about that place. Heard they was all killed.
That's why they didn't say.
Smokers?
Maybe smokers, maybe slavers. So what's it worth? We trading or not?
We'll tally it like pure hydro. Works out to
62 chits.
I want twice that.
So this leads me to a question, because the next scene they jump to is they're at, like, the local tavern, the local bar, which is actually kind of the general store, too. And everyone is after hydro, in water. Pure hydro. Is it just regular water?
Yeah.
That's all people are drinking, yeah. Is regular. So, like, when we see this guy that is desperate for a drop of hydro to drink, it's just water.
Yeah.
He just wants pure, clean water. Water.
Non-urinated water.
Non-salty water.
You got money. Then he spends money buying a tomato plant.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's replacing his lime one.
That's true.
His lime one kind of got destroyed a little bit.
I don't, again, this dirt thing, like, why?
It's a hot commodity.
But
dirt.
Why?
Because people haven't seen it. They,
but
they
what
don't
are they
going to
do with it?
Yeah.
I mean, one guy eat, like, the guy who's weighing
it.
He eats it a little bit, but I think it's more just like a. It keeps the hope alive of there's something out there. So it's kind of like, oh, you found a coin. It's part of the gold at the end of a rainbow. Whoa, give me that. Like, maybe it can lead me there or let me think
all
of
right.
that. I'm kind of like closer to like an unreachable star.
I don't buy it.
Okay. You're not buying and he's not selling. So
correct.
They've decided he's a mutant with gills.
He is.
And
they
so
didn't just
gonna,
decide it. He actually is.
They're gonna put him in the poops,
yep.
As I said. Just then, the atoll, or whatever it's called, because they say it differently every time they mention
that's
it,
true.
Is attacked by the smokers.
Ah!
Now, we never see the slavers, do we?
No, we never see the slavers.
Yeah, they mention it as like this looming threat.
Do you think there was going to be a Waterworld 2?
I think so.
They set it up like there could be.
He sails off in the end, so I think that
maybe
they were planning
30
that.
Years later they're going to make a Waterworld 2.
So the bad guys, the villains in this movie, as you said, the smokers. Are they called the smokers because their vehicles give off smoke, or because Dennis Hopper is smoking a cigarette in almost every single scene?
Yeah, and he gives out cigarettes as currency.
Yeah.
Amongst his gang.
So are they smokers because they're smoking cigarettes or because their vehicles give off smoke?
I think it's primarily because the vehicles give off smoke, but then someone's like, oh, and we'll have them smoking.
Yeah. Why would cigarettes be so abundant in Waterworld? Because cigarettes, if they got wet, would be unusable.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't really smoke a wet cigarette, so why are they just kind of shielded them when the polar ice caps melted? They just had like a bunker of cigarettes? I don't know. It was kind of weird.
Well, I'm thinking what they did. Well, I mean, once you get to where they are and you see that they're in an old, massive boat, maybe
they're in the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah, they are. Yes.
So I wasn't
that's
getting
what it
to
is.
That yet.
No, that's
I don't. I don't care about
that's
spoilers
okay.
in this movie.
That's okay.
So they're in the Exxon Valdez. So that's when you know that's where they're getting all their fuel. But the other thing, too, is they might have had, like, a cargo hold of, like, cigarettes.
That's true. Maybe it was in, like, the captain's quarters.
It was the Exxon Valdez.
But that would be an awful idea. All those cigarettes
Marlboro's.
On the Exxon Valdez.
Maybe that's why Captain Joe Hazel would crash.
Light. You'd still need to light them.
But where are they flicking those cigarettes? We almost saw a disaster in one scene of a
true.
Flick cigarette.
So the atoll is attacked by the smokers, this gang of pirates that are seeking a girl named Enola, played by Tina Majorino,
yes.
who, according to their leader, the Deacon, as you mentioned, Dennis Hopper, has a map to dry land tattooed on her back.
Yes, so let's hear a little about that, because his kind of number two, his second in charge, is questioning one of the guys at the bar who really wants the hydro. And because there's just like this myth going around about dry land and about the map that's on the back of her back. It's on her backpack. So let's hear about that.
Not till you tell me. She got inklings on her back. I seen her. They say if you read the marks on the child, they'll lead you all the way to dry land.
Dry land's a myth.
Well, some still believe. They say the smokers even got an eye out for her.
Well, then, we better keep it to ourselves.
So Tina Majorino, she had a lot of kid roles, but then when she grew up, she was in Napoleon Dynamite. That's what I remember. She was like the girl with the side ponytail. And then she's been in other things since then, but this is probably...
So she has a big old tattoo.
Yeah.
And like no one
it's
thinks...
It's like a circle.
It's weird. It looks kind of like the world or like a compass. No one thinks to like copy it.
Yeah, they just
they just
her.
Want to steal her.
Like, I feel like you can just draw. She might even let you just draw. She likes drawing.
She likes drawing.
She could be
she
like,
might
just
draw it for you. She has her guardian, Helen, played by Jean Triplehorn, and they attempt to escape on a gas balloon with Gregor.
Gregor, played by Michael Jeter.
Yes.
He's a great character actor.
He's an inventor, but the balloon is released too early.
Oh. Now, do you think this was like a little bit of nod to like Wizard of Oz a little bit?
Because
he was a really like wacky inventor, smart dude.
So do you think her name being Enola was a nod to the
Enola
Gay?
The plane that dropped the H-bomb?
Yeah, the thought went through my head.
Oh, all right.
Really weird line when we first meet Dennis Hopper's the Deacon, where he says, "I really hate sales." Okay.
I mean,
that's a weird character trait.
I think you can just say, there's a really terrible line with Dennis Hopper, and just leave it at that.
Because
just a bunch of really poorly written one-liners.
By Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, especially him. Well, it's kind of a weird
really
juxtaposition
him,
because it's Dennis Hopper with weird one-liners, and then Kevin Costner not talking a lot.
Kevin Costner looking bored.
Yeah, he doesn't talk a lot.
No, this was like the last Bourne movie where he said like six lines of like words. I mean, this is pretty much what Kevin Costner did in this movie.
There's a weird scene where the Deacon kind of is organizing the rest of the smokers. And I thought it was a really weird choice that the music in this movie was by James Newton Howard. For the most part, it was all original scores. But at one point during the movie, he's organizing them to kind of go after the Mariner. And all of a sudden, they start playing the Peter Gunn theme.
Yeah.
So you got like this original music, this original score the whole time. It's like, this is Waterworld, here's the music, and then they're like, here's a song from pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, what was that? I don't understand the use of that song. It's weird.
Pop culture doesn't exist in this world.
Exactly. That's why.
Like, they don't
really
believe
strange.
That cities are real.
Yeah.
Helen, instead of going with Gregor, rescues the Mariner.
Yep.
He's in a cage.
He was in like a cage, right?
He's in a cage. He's slipping into the poops. And they save him and they get on his boat. And she insists that he take the two of them, her and Enola, with him.
Yep.
So they escape to open sea aboard his trimaran.
Oh, that's what it's called?
Yes.
A trimaran.
They're pursued by the smokers. And though they escape, Helen's naive actions result in damage to the Mariner's boat, and he angrily cuts her hair, followed by Enola's hair, for talking back at him. So this skips a bunch of stuff that happens.
So I wanted to play this scene where he's not getting along with either of his two passengers.
And he's very casual about the idea of child murder.
Well, here we go, because this kind of calls that out, because the kid calls him out, saying he's not so tough, and then he blatantly just throws her into the water.
You talk a lot.
I talk a lot because you don't talk at all. And how many?
Including little girls?
I'm not afraid of you. I told Helen you wouldn't be so ugly if you cut your hair.
But you talk all the time.
So yeah, he throws her in the water. Now, one of the things I remember as a kid, so when this movie came out, I was about 14, 15. So I had seen quite many movies at that age, and the hero character was always sympathetic to the people he was protecting. And I always remembered this movie, how much of a dick he was to like the kid.
Yeah, it's he's entirely unsympathetic.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it doesn't come across as he's a rogue. They try to throw in a scene where he's swimming with the kid later, but it's just he comes across for the entire movie like he's just an asshole.
And I'm sure you were going to get to it in a minute, Brian, but even more than that, so he runs into another drifter played by Kim Coates, who is this actor in a lot of things. He was in Sons of Anarchy. That's why I know his name. And I don't know if Kim Coates is Irish, but he's playing this Irish drifter. He's got this really like weird Irish accent. So even more kind of valuable than the dirt. I mean, the dirt is, but almost as much as that is just paper. Because you can think of, in a world of water, paper would just get destroyed.
No.
In a world of water.
So he offers Aff paper, which is like amazing to see. And in order to trade paper, he wants the women. The Mariner is just straight up like, okay, I'll offer you the older one. So let's hear a little bit about like how magical paper is in this world.
What you want for the women?
They're not for sale.
No such thing as not for sale. Not for sale. Not for sale.
Not
a day of hair, or would you consider selling them separate?
No.
Our business is done here unless you've got some resin or sale you can part with.
I told you once already. I don't have it. I don't have it. Don't have it. Don't.
Haven't you got it for trade rumors, sir?
Wait.
I do have something that'll make a change in my mind. Something we can't pass on. I took it off from the Tola refugee camp. It's the life savings of the entire clan.
Paper! Who has ever seen paper? Look at it. Smell it.
I'm saving it for special trade.
So he's willing to whore out Gene Triplehorn for the paper.
This is the point where I said, fuck this movie.
Well,
like, I hated this scene.
Why do you... What is paper going to do?
This, again, it's just they're willing to...
It brings no
give
function.
Anything that they haven't seen before that's like a... Like it's a, just a distant star that they've never
it doesn't
experienced.
Matter. You're not going
like,
to trade a
like,
person
just
for it.
Beyond even that, this movie was written by like a total of 6 people. And this scene
is just a couple.
Oh no! Throughout the drafts, like from what I read, there was like 6 different people that did a role on it.
Okay.
And this scene somehow still survives because I think they were like, "Oh, let's be edgy. Let's have a scene where this creepy rapist character wants to buy the 7-year-old girl, but he'll settle for Gene Triplehorn."
But it leads to the Mariner's redemption.
He doesn't earn that. He's just like, I decided they're not for sale because I looked at the pictures and this paper's not as good as I wanted it to
well,
be.
Well, because he gives into the deal, but then like when she doesn't want to sleep with
him. He sells her,
but then backs out of it and then he's just like, she's not for sale anymore. And he attacks the dude with a knife. He kills him. It's his redemption.
But
it's not redemption.
Just, and then he just sits there being a miserable ass the rest of the movie too.
It's just a weird situation.
Well, and this is also, so on 2 occasions, we've had characters offer sex to the Mariner.
Yes.
So first on the atoll, the citizens wanted him to have sex with a girl.
With the girl.
Because they wanted his seed.
Until they knew he was
until
a mutant.
Until they saw he was a mutant.
Yeah.
They wanted, and he was just like, no. And then Gene Triplehorn has like a magic little one strap that she can pull that drops her entire clothing.
Yeah, that dress was hanging on by a thread.
And she just gets naked and offers herself to him basically to save the kid's life.
Right. It shows her commitment.
It shows her commitment, but again, it shows him just being pain in the ass. So that did lead me to wonder if, in addition to his gills and his webbed feet, if he had like a dolphin penis. Like
a
duck penis.
A whale
with
bone.
The corkscrew shape.
Ooh, wow.
Like if
that'd
he was
be painful.
And that's why he keeps deciding against it. Later on, he's like, I didn't have sex with you because you didn't want to have sex with
well,
me.
Well, we'll get to that. I have questions about that scene.
His character is bad. It's a poorly written character, poorly developed. They try to give him moments of redemption that aren't earned at all. Just saying, you know what, I decided that selling this woman, it's not going to be what I want to do. Selling her in the first place is a shitty thing for a character to do.
When they decide that they need food at some point later.
Yes.
This is a scene I don't remember from this movie. The Mariner shows how he kind of like water skis or just drags behind the boat.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this giant whale monster thing eats him and he kills it from the inside.
I'd like
and
to think like, it was the Meg.
Yeah, right. I just saw another trailer for that. But I did not remember this was... I didn't think this kind of creature existed in this world.
Yeah.
I was very confused by it.
Well,
it was almost like the Kraken coming up in one of those Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
This
again.
Is why I wanted to be. I would love to have sat through a writer's thing, be like,
yeah.
All right, let's do this now. And I'd be like, what the hell is wrong
like,
with
you? Probably, there's like half of their effects budget right there.
Yeah, that's
there are so many more interesting ideas that kind of appear that don't get actually explored. That is the type of peril that I'd like to see them have to deal with on open
like
water.
Like the creatures out there. Yeah. Like, what's this? Like, what's instead, the thing you it's deal just, with at Waterworld?
Attack after attack after attack from the smokers. Yep. One of whom, I don't know if you picked up on this, the smoker in the plane. Yeah, that's Jack Black.
The smoker I was...
I did not pick that up.
The one that I was also questioning about, the guy who was kind of the clerk, the guy who was like the nebbish guy with the book.
Yeah.
He looked like he was someone too. Like, I was like, who is that guy?
We'll have to look him up.
Yeah, we'll have to look him up for the meeting.
I think I got the clip here of Jack Black.
Jack Black? He actually speaks?
Don't hit the kid!
That's Jack Black.
That's Jack Black.
Wow.
Saying, don't hit the kid.
I'm going to have to rewatch that scene.
Why?
I just want to see Jack Black.
Just
go to YouTube.
I've rewatched it twice.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Waterworld 9/10 movie clip, Death from Above.
I'll go back and watch that.
There were moments where I started enjoying it, and then I actively started hating it.
Do have to bring up, so at one point they get to an atoll, we'll say, and maybe you got to this already. It kind of looks like a tree on the water.
Yeah, it's where they do the Weekend at Bernie's.
That's what I was going to say, is Weekend at Bernie's going on. There are people that thought were waving to them that were dead, and I was like, they're doing a Weekend at Bernie's. One of the things I did think was kind of cool about this movie is that when they showed aspects of the boat and all the contraptions on his boat, they actually did some really cool underwater shots. I think some of the cinematography of how they shot it from
underwater
was very interesting. And I thought that was kind of cool.
They were
doing like a few shots where it was like in the water and they were shooting up at things that I thought was kind
of
cool.
But that's about the only quality of this movie that was good.
Speaking of the underwater shots, continuing on in the plot, Helen explains that she believes humans once lived on land and demands to know where the mariner collected his dirt.
Yes.
He provides her with a diving bell and dives with her underwater, showing the remains of a city in the dirt on the ocean's floor.
So let's pause there real quick. So this is when he kind of breaks down and says, because he's brought dirt to that atoll originally, so they think he's been to dry land, but he says it's all a myth, and let's hear that interaction before that kind of the next sequence.
No more life. Where are the marks on her back?
People say it's the way to dry land.
Dry land's a myth!
Boo, you said to yourself, do you know where it is? He did.
You're a fool. To believe in something you've never seen before.
You've seen it? I've touched it. Dirt was richer and darker than yours. It was in the basket we found in no land.
It doesn't exist.
Well, how can you be so sure?
Because I sail farther than most have dreamed. And I've never seen it.
But the things on your boat.
Things on my boat? What?
There are things on your boat that nobody has ever seen. What are these shells? And that reflecting glass? The music box? Well, it's not from dry land, and where? Where?
You want to see dry land? You really want to see it? I'll take you to dry land.
So as you said, Brian, in the description is he takes her under the water in this kind of bubble
thing. They go
thing.
Into a city.
And there's these underwater cities and boats and skyscrapers. They're all underwater. Now, the idea of this is cool.
The
execution
is awful.
Yep.
I
like the concept,
though. The shot as they're going down, my favorite part was...
Of him, like, kicking his legs?
Well, yeah, as he's swimming this little diving bell down, there's at least, like, two or three times where you clearly see him take his hand and put it to his mouth because he clearly has a respirator in his hand.
So you thought they were actually underwater?
Oh, yeah, they were definitely underwater. Really? That's one of the reasons why this was such an expensive movie.
Yeah.
Because they built these giant sets that were, you know, full of water tanks, and that's an expensive thing to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I think is something that Aquaman decides not to do for
their
movie.
That's true. So he got the dirt from the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
So that's where he keeps getting all the dirt. Faking like he's been, but he's just been to the bottom of the ocean.
So after this scene, they surface, and they find that the smokers have caught up to them again.
So let's
kill them if they do not reveal Enola, who's hiding aboard the boat.
So this is when Dennis Hopper actually introduces himself.
Proper introductions first. I'm the deacon. If you don't recall the face, perhaps it's because I didn't always look like this.
Now, I suspect she's somewhere real close. So we could tear this boat apart looking for her, but I'd rather somebody just tell me where she is. The first one that does that lives. And the runner-up, well, actually, there are no runners-up. Oh, sweet Joe, I love this part. Choose a 1-2. Live or die. You know, personally, I'd rather shoot this bird than the devil here. Huh? But you know something? I don't think you're gonna tell me, are you? Huh? Too bad. Well, come on. Huh? What do you say? She's not your kind. You don't even have a kind.
So my two Dennis Hopper comments that I want to say is, one is he's like, if you don't recognize this face, it's like they never met him. The first time they attacked,
yeah, and like, where they
attacked
the
atoll, and he was on a boat.
Where are they going to get the news? And where are they? Were they printed newspapers?
But my argument is they never saw his face in the first place.
But what are they gonna
like that accident happened before they met him. And then the other thing is, I trying to remember this movie, I always thought he was wearing an eye patch, but then he's wearing a goggles where like one of the goggles is blackened out, and he's just kind of wearing it. I always thought he had just an eye patch.
Yeah, I thought he had like an eye patch sewn onto his face or something.
Like that. So that was a kind of a, so that, yeah, he's the deacon.
It's
he's
a, it's another Mandela effect, I guess, on a very small
I guess
scale.
So. Yeah, Sinbad shows up.
They're threatening the two of them, and then the little girl screams, and they're like, oh, we found her.
And they jump underwater and do some underwater
smooching. The mariner takes Helen, and they dive underwater to avoid capture, with the guild mariner helping Helen to breathe.
Via smooching.
Yeah, they're making out, and it's letting her breathe.
And then, at one point, so they had taken down that plane that Jack Black was on, right?
Yeah.
And so they come back up for air, and they're sitting on the boat, and that's that whole thing where you're like, she's like, why didn't you want me? He's like, because you didn't want me. And then, did they end up having sex at that point?
I don't know.
It's not.
With his dolphin penis?
All right. When they surface, they find that Enola has been abducted and the boat destroyed.
Yes.
Gregor managed to catch up to and rescue them, taking them to a new makeshift atoll, inhabited by the survivors of the first attack.
So let's hear a little bit of Gregor, because it's kind of...
It's
kind of an interesting character he plays. So this is when he finds them. The next clip is kind of that, at that atoll, of them figuring out the map finally on her back.
Smoke. I never would have found you. Who sent this you? Victor Sapiens. Is that really you? I'll throw the rope down. You catch it, I'll help you climb up.
Helen, the papers the mariner brought you. It's the same language the tattoo is written in. They're numbers.
McGregor, your precious shield.
We can't pay. We're wasting valuable time. More smokers will come. We need to be moving now.
My friend, don't you see we need this child if we want to find dry land?
I'm not going. Nobody is.
We've already been there to welcome their eyes.
Not that is it.
But the numbers, yes, they think I do. They seem to be some ancient form of geocratic location. Latitude, longitude. It doesn't make sense, though. The numbers, they seem to be backwards or something.
It's upside down.
The world? The poles have reversed themselves.
The map of the cities below. The world wasn't created and deluged. It was covered by...
That's blasphemy!
No, it's true. I've seen it with my own eyes.
Can someone explain that to me? So, like, the polar ice caps melted and then longitude and latitude swapped? Or they were mapping the cities, but it's not mapped by the cities anymore? What was the solution there?
I have no
idea. Was it something about how the poles shifted? I don't know.
One of the guys who was, like, part of their crew and was also in the original atoll was the guy in Ghost, who kills Patrick Swayze. Did anyone recognize that dude?
No.
He was one of the guys. Okay. So there you go. Michael Jeter. Like I said, he really commits to the role. Every time he shows up in a movie, he's got this wacky character that he really, like, sticks to. I'm just thinking, like, Green Mile and the like.
Sure. We'll go with that.
So the Mariner, he takes a captured smoker's jet ski to chase down the Deacon aboard the Hulk.
The hulking boat?
It says the Hulk.
Oh, that, maybe that's,
I guess that's
they
a
called
ship
the boat.
Type. That's,
maybe that's what they called the boat.
So it's the Hulk of the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
With most of the smokers below deck to row the tanker, the Mariner confronts the Deacon. This is, I love how this summary is just saying, I don't care about what happens in this movie. Well, they're just skipping entire chunks.
Yeah. Here's some interesting things I wrote down.
Ahead.
So one of the things is that the Deacon, now this is something I was really confused about, and maybe we have to look this up. He praises the portrait of Captain Joe Hazelwood.
Yes, that was the captain of the Exxon Valdez.
That was the actual captain.
Yes.
Okay. Because I was like, I didn't know that was the name of the guy.
I think that's how we're supposed to know that it's the Exxon.
Okay, I gotcha. And then the other thing is that, so he's been promising his people dry land for so long.
Yes.
And some of them are really upset because he hasn't brought it to them. But he kind of appeases them by throwing them cans of Spam.
And did you notice?
Fight over the Spam.
They're not actually, it's not actually Spam though.
It's not actual Spam?
It's Smeat.
Oh, it's like knockoff
like,
meat.
There's
That's
one
funny.
Shot where it's like right in the foreground, and it just says Smeat, which implies that Spam is the canned version of Pam.
And they're too good to sponsor this movie because Jack Daniels wasn't. He had a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Yeah, he had a bottle of
Quite
Jack.
True.
How long has it been since the polar ice caps melted? That bottle of Jack Daniels would have been drank like years ago.
He's not drinking Jack Daniels, though. He's drinking water. They're refilling those bottles with water.
Well, yes. But it was there's colored. Some Jack in there because at one point...
It was colored like Jack Daniels.
It might be dirty.
His right-hand
dirty
man...
Dirty water.
But his right-hand man with like the long locks, he drinks some of it and replaces it with water. And Enola goes, oh, he's going to be mad.
I don't
at
think
you.
It's water. I think it's something else that he replaces it with.
I thought he was replacing, like, kind of the thing we did in high school where you drank your parents' liquor and then refilled it up to the line with water.
I never did that.
You're such a good boy.
You're
such a Mariner, Brian.
Okay, yeah. I'm just going to sit here bored for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
So they have Enola captured, and then the whole time, the guy with the long locks is threatening her. And she kind of brings up the myth of the Mariner. Meanwhile, they're showing like how he's infiltrating the boat. So let's kind of hear about this. Yes. Is almost like the superhero myth of the Mariner.
We're just talking about a friend. What's his name?
I don't have a name. So death can't find him. He doesn't have a home or people to care for. He's not afraid of anything. Not the least of all. He's fast and strong with a big wind. He can hear 100 miles and see 100 miles underwater. He can hide in the shadow of a new sun. He can be right behind you and you won't even know until you're dead.
Give it a rest.
He'll come for me, he will.
So she's like talking about him while he's infiltrating.
Yeah,
he's kind of doing all these things to get to the boat.
It's doing a Die Hard in a boat.
Yeah, it's true. More of an Under Siege, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that actually happened on a boat.
That is true.
Steven Seagal.
And Under Siege 2, Dark Territory.
So,
with Eric Bogosian.
He confronts the Deacon, and he threatens to ignite the reserves of oil still on the tanker unless he returns Enola.
They had that little dude that was, like, at the bottom of the oil
yeah,
well.
There's a guy that's just
like
stuck in the oil.
Yeah.
Like, his function is to sit down there and be like, I'm still in oil. So the Deacon calls the Mariner's bluff, knowing that that would destroy the ship. But to his surprise, the Mariner drops a flare into the oil.
And the little man goes, thank God.
Yeah.
Like, he was ready to die. He wanted to be dead at that point.
Yeah.
Because he just lived in the oil.
The lower decks of the ship are engulfed in flame, and the ship starts to sink. The Mariner rescues Enola and escapes via a rope from Gregor's balloon with Helen and the Atoll Enforcer aboard.
The sheriff, yes.
Name is Atoll Enforcer.
Rick, what did you think of the hot air balloon effects?
Bad.
We can just pass by that.
Okay, all right.
I mean, some of the underwater scenes were better than...
Well, here's the thing about this movie. It was weird because a lot of the stuff was
the clouds
practical.
Were awful.
A lot of stuff was practical until they were like underwater city.
Yeah.
And then the balloon. It was now it looks bad, but like, why do they.
When he shoots a giant kite out of his boat.
Yeah.
And there's just this giant CG kite that's serving as a sail.
I don't remember that part.
It was
awful.
Bad.
I don't remember.
I'm surprised you didn't pick up on that in your two viewings of this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
You should watch it again.
Maybe I will.
Literally, because we watched the streaming, right? So we all watched it on HBO.
Yeah.
Literally, HBO's like, analytics are going to be like, three people watch this movie this week.
Keep one guy watched it like eight times.
Eight times, right. Now, I don't know if you got, you're going to get to this or not, Brian. So once they're in the hot air balloon,
yep,
the deacon shoots at them and Enola falls out.
Yeah. So as the mariner brings Enola to Helen, the deacon manages to grab the rope to escape the sinking ship. He fires upon the balloon, shaking Enola from the balloon and falling back into the ocean, where he quickly rejoins his men on jet skis to capture her. That is such a poorly written sentence.
Yeah.
The mariner makes an impromptu bungee jump from the balloon to grab Enola right before the deacon and his men collide and die in the explosion.
I feel like he invented the bungee jump here.
Effect.
This is hilariously
bad. Was like boing.
Was amazing.
My two comments about this. So the first
Hear
one
the
is
sarcasm.
He jumps. And he's like, tie it! And they don't tie it until like right before he's almost at the bottom.
And it's not much of a knot at that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now, it's really an impromptu knot.
So, it gets tied to a hot air balloon. With the force of him going down.
Oh, it would absolutely.
And it's just a standard rope. It's not a bungee rope of any sort.
No, it's just regular rope.
It's a regular
rope.
I don't think
he'd bounce all the way up.
He'd bounce all the way back up with another body in tow.
Yeah.
I think he would be more likely to pull the hot air balloon down.
That's
true.
I agree
completely.
At least a little bit.
So wait, Brian.
This is the dumbest
possible
solution.
I'm going to explain why it didn't go down.
Because the magic of cinema?
The magic of Michael Jeter.
Because when the jet skis collided, they caused an
the
explosion.
It's like the
that
hot air
raised
that,
the balloon back up again.
I like it. Here's my other little weird quirk about. So rewatching this movie the first time, I stopped it at this point a little bit. So he had bungee jumped. He saved Enola, right? Unbeknownst to me, when you restart the movie, it goes back about like 5 minutes. So I restarted the movie thinking I was picking up right where I left off.
Yeah.
But I started again. Enola falls out of the hot air balloon again. I go, how many times did she fall out of the hot air balloon? Like, it seemed like she fell out twice because I had just watched the scene where he already saved her by bungee.
Yeah.
And then when I started the movie again after taking a break, she fell out again.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, this movie could have had her just keep falling out of the hot air balloon.
It would have been a better movie.
That's
the other thing
highly
that,
possible.
That I thought was amazing, and this is why I laughed and literally like had to just fast forward like I normally do, but
you laughed
jet
and
skis,
fast forwarded.
The jet skis exploded prior to impact.
Oh, really?
So if you watch it again,
I gotta watch it a third time.
If you watch the jet skis before they hit each other, they explode. So nothing actually happens. They actually just explode.
But the deacon dies.
Aww.
In the end.
Yeah. The end.
Not yet.
Yeah, I thought this was almost towards the end of the movie at this point.
Nope.
There's still like another 20 minutes at that point. But they keep going. They're following the map. They realize they're going the wrong direction. And they follow it. And then all of a sudden, a seagull appears. And as we all know from movies and from navigation.
There you go.
Seagulls equal land. Because they kind of stay near the land.
Sometime later, Gregor has been able to identify that tattoo on Enola's back as coordinates with reversed directions.
Yes.
Following the map, Gregor the Mariner, the Atoll Enforcer, Helen and Enola discovered dry land.
The Atoll Enforcer.
And dry land is apparently the top of Mount Everest, filled with vegetation and wildlife.
Is that really what it is?
Apparently.
Holy crap.
I didn't know that.
They also find a crude hut with the remains of Enola's parents.
Which is just awkward.
Yeah, they just find some skeletons.
I
don't remember
that.
I don't remember anything. This part of the movie, like to the end of the movie, I didn't remember any of that.
No.
Well, that was me after Kevin Costner took a piss, so.
Well, at one point, she mentions, so that rant when she said, like, you've seen dry land, like, you've gathered things we've never seen before, the music box. They play a music box at the, is that the same music box?
No, I think it's the tune that Enola's kind of been singing.
She's been humming a little
And so it's like, oh, this is her home. She's home.
She's home.
Those skeletons are her parents who apparently decompose very quickly.
So they're kind of going to make a home here.
But realizing he does not belong on dry land, the mariner decides that he cannot stay as the sea calls to him.
Here's his
He's like Moana.
Here's his goodbye to Enola.
First time in your life you've got nothing to say? Enola, I have to go now.
Came back for me.
I love
like you.
Why are you leaving?
I don't belong here. I belong out there.
I belong here.
It's too strange here. It doesn't move right.
Mom says that it's only land sickness. We're all feeling it. It'll go away soon.
It's more than that.
And then there's no dialogue for the rest of the movie.
Yes, he finds a new wooden sailboat and departs as Helen and Enola bid their goodbyes to him.
So they're going to find a home on this new land.
And by the way, it was like this point that I realized Enola wasn't Helen's kid.
Oh, no, they talk about that earlier.
Do they? Because I did not pick up on
that. I had a whole conversation.
I didn't realize it until after as well. There's a whole conversation.
He's like, is that your kid? She's like, no. He's like, you act like it. And she's like, well, she has no one else. Guys, if you watch it twice, there's a whole conversation
apparently
that goes on. So he kind of sails off, and then the music swells.
I will say, any exposition that happens as a result of Kevin Costner's dialogue, you can't blame someone for missing it.
That's true.
Because for a movie that seems like it was a passion project of some sort for him,
yes,
he seems to have no desire to be there.
Well, it's weird, because...
Maybe he's incapable of dramatic acting and... appearing authentic.
I'm going to disagree.
This movie, he's shit.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that across his whole career. So let's at least say end of movie first. Now let's talk about Kevin Costner passion projects, because those do not work out well.
No.
Like, let's look at The Postman.
That's Waterworld on land.
Yes, that's another one that does not work out great.
I will deliver the mail.
Well, that's right. It's all about the mail.
That's it. That's what he does. He's not even the actual postman. He picks up the bag.
I thought he was the postman.
No, he found the bag, and he's like, I will deliver this
mail. I thought there was a third one of Kevin Costner passion project trilogy that did not work out well. And I can't remember what the third one is, but right now I want to say, now, gentlemen, we've kind of got your input throughout the movie, so if you want to get into it more, you can, but the forum is, I'll let both of you go. What did you think about this movie?
I think Kevin Costner's best role was when he was in The Big Chill.
Oh, when he was dead.
Yeah, he played a dead body.
Okay.
I've covered it. This movie was not amazing. I mean, do I need to cover it more? Don't watch it.
That's what I'm saying, guys.
Don't watch it.
Again, I'm being controversial here. This movie is extremely dumb, but I think it's fun. It's fun.
It's not fun at all.
His boat is fun. He's got little contraptions. It's fun. Yeah, he's a dick. But again, turn your brain off. Get ready for bed. Turn it on and watch him kind of go on his pulley system, swinging around like he's Tarzan.
It doesn't even look good or fun.
That part looks good. It's practical. And I think that looks better.
There's a lot of things I don't understand. The beginning of the movie, when he's diving down.
It is a weird choice for him for this movie.
It's like a boat shows up. Literally,
a boat show?
You'd be able to see a boat. You're on the horizon. You're on the water. It's flat. If you were down there for how many hours was he down there? Maybe 30. I mean, not hours, but 30.
When?
In the first
when he was underwater.
When he was underwater.
Well, how long? He's a gill man.
Well, I did like when he was coming back out of the water, he did like a little tumble out of the water into his boat.
Yeah, that was a weird choice. He just did a somersault.
It was a really weird choice.
Yeah, he did a somersault.
That's why I liked it.
I have a lot of problems.
But for some reason, I really like that scene when the smokers had that line and he gets to one side of the boat and he tips it. He's like, everyone this side of the boat, and they tip the boat and they kind of avoid that trap line, that trip line that the smokers have. He uses his body weight to tip the boat. And I was like, that's cool. I like that. He really manipulates his boat well. Yeah, he's a sailor. He's a mariner. He's a man's man. No. But he's got earrings.
I think the problem is, as I'm thinking of his performance, I think he was trying to be like Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Harrison Ford
would never be in a movie like this.
No, but like he was trying to be like that rogue character, like an Indiana Jones.
It would be
Jones,
a better movie.
Like, it would be a much better movie.
Oh, yeah.
Get rid of Dennis Hopper and add
Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my. Big Chill reunion.
Wow, that would be an amazing.
All right, Joe. So we talked about, I want to end on a positive note.
Okay.
Because we kind of.
The movie ended.
So let's, Rick, you were starting to get it a little bit. Let's go out on a high note. What is one of your favorite Kevin Costner movies, one of his best performances?
Prince of Thieves.
Prince of Thieves. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Brian?
I mean, other than The Big Chill, like the most watchable Kevin Costner movies. Well, I like Field of Dreams, I guess.
I was going to say, I was going to end it on, if there's any movie where Kevin Costner shines and every time it on actually brings tears to my eyes, it's Field of Dreams.
I like Field of Dreams, but I like it because of Kevin Costner.
He does a good job.
He does a fine job.
He's a straight man. He's a straight man in it.
It does a fine job in it. The reason is I think I would rewatch Prince of Thieves. I don't know.
Prince of Thieves, I think is great.
Yeah.
But Field of Dreams.
But I also think it's
best,
everyone else in
that
movie.
Because we were questioning his dramatic prowess, and Field of Dreams is his top notch, which I will say all day long. And on that note, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Rick and Brian, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. Good night. Goodbye.
Rick wanted to end it on a high note.
Vending machines all over the planet have exploded, and carbonated beverages have now replaced the land. The people have learned to adapt in a new civilization known as Liquid Land.
We live in a world of soda all over the ground. I'm a drifter here. This is my boat, Dr. Pepper. Would you trade with me?
Those are the rules of Liquid Land.
Well, what you got to trade?
I will trade you this soda cup.
I will trade you this beautiful woman. Introduce yourself.
Hello.
That's her.
I'm a beautiful woman.
I don't
have diabetes.
She doesn't have diabetes. This is a beautiful woman. Would you trade her for your soda cup?
I love this land.
She loves Liquid Land.
I don't want her to see my corkscrew penis.
Oh, whoa. Well, if that's the case, I can trade you a shroud of mystery, and then you can do it in the corner, and no one would know. If you're going to have a surge, a jolt surge, again, Liquid Land.
She doesn't want a Mountain Dew me.
What do you think about that? Oh, by the way, my name's Mr. Pibb. That's my pirate name. I feel like negotiations are pretty tense here. Can we call just kind of a
paper?
Can we mellow yellow for a minute?
This is as bad as Waterworld.
But delicious.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this episode of the $5 Bin Podcast and our full movie reviews it of Waterworld. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number $5 Bin POD, like us on Facebook, or email us at thefivedollarbin.podcast@gmail.com. Download and subscribe to all our episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and a review? Helps others to find the podcast as well. Why, thank ya! For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, you can visit natickimprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. Well, that's it for this episode, Cinemaniacs. Until next time, hasta la vista, baby fishies that live in water. World.